Welcome to the RodeoKids.com podcast, where we empower youth to be their best selves through the values and traditions of the rodeo and Western lifestyle.
My name's Isaiah. That is Zach.
Isaiah and Zach?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
How are you, Zach?
Oh, doing good. How about you, sir?
Great.
So, I figure I'll start off the podcast. We have a good list of questions, and we are just excited for this opportunity. You know, the funny thing is, I was making food one day, and it was the day you called me back, and I save all these numbers on my phone, and Clinton's like, did that say Mike White, my brother? And I was like, yeah, it did. And he's like PBR Mike White? And he, I was like, yeah. And he's like, no way. And he was like super excited. And he's like, look at this video and look at this video. And he was just showing me all these video. I mean, he is like PBR riding crazy. He's like, he was just like overwhelmed with that. It was just kind of like a cool thing to be able to see and hear.
Right.
Well, all right. Welcome to the Rodeo Kids podcast. I'm Isaiah Ellis and that's Zach Kahn. We're going to be doing this podcast joint, and hopefully a couple more ambassadors and the owner of Rodeo Kids will show up. But until then, we are going to start this thing off. First off, could you tell us who you are and what you do?
My name is Mike White. I'm a two-time world champion bull rider. I retired in 2010. You know, I grew up in South Louisiana on a very small ranch. And I guess my whole life involved rodeo. You know, I knew I can remember trying to follow in my brother's footsteps when I was 6 years old. And you know, that it's just been a part of my life. Rodeo has been. And you know, my oldest brother Pat was a stock contractor, so I had every opportunity to be involved in rodeo, and I was, and I went with him. And I helped him at the rodeos, and it seemed like it was almost every weekend we were going to a rodeo. And so that's just been my entire life, rodeo.
And I know from the sounds of it, are you first generation cowboy or second?
Well, no, my dad was a kite skier, and my mom didn't even rodeo either. You know, if it wouldn't have been for my brother, I probably wouldn't have been involved in rodeo.
Right. I get that. And that first generation is kind of a hard thing when I'm first generation, and it's kind of hard to learn, especially when your parents don't know. It usually in things that you do with that, it's like your parents know, they take you to things. It's kind of trusting you. Your parents having to trust you and your decisions really when you're first figuring those things out. And I know that's something that's kind of been hard for first generation for me.
Right. Well, you know, it wasn't too bad for me because my parents, because my brother, you know, I mean, he had been rodeoing well before I was born. And so I have two brothers and two sisters, and they all rodeoed. So, you know, by the time my parents got to me, it was just that's all that they were involved in was rodeos. So it was pretty easy once I got there and was doing that.
Right.
Yeah, so we hear that, you know, you're, you know, really big in the bull riding industry. So what other events did you compete in, and how did those start as a kid? And
well, you know, and I guess I really done a lot of things as a young kid. And when I got to high school, I team roped a little bit. I didn't take it very serious. And I roped calves, I bulldogged, and I rode bulls. And I tried bareback riding in high school, and I found out right quick I didn't want to be a bareback rider because that was too rough. And when I went to college, I tried saddle bronc riding, and I got on two saddle bronc horses, and it didn't go very well. One of them flipped head over heels with me, and that cured me. I wanted nothing to do with it. So You know, so that was the, kind of my high school days was that way. And I got a full ride scholarship to go out to Big Spring, Texas at Howard College. And I really had no interest in going out there. But my mom, basically, she said, you're going to go. If you don't like it, then you can come back home. But, you know, you've got a full paid scholarship. You need to go see what it's all about. So, you know, I even in high school, I can remember when I went to school, I wasn't there to learn nothing. I knew what I wanted to be. I hope no kids listen to this because I could care less about school, really. I mean, I did not. I knew I was going to be a cowboy. That's what I dreamed of ever since I was a little kid. I watched the National Finals Rodeo constantly. I mean, that's all I could. I would eat it, breathe it, and live it. That's all I wanted to do. And so I made it through high school and went to college. And it was probably the best decision I ever made. And I say that because I didn't go to college to learn nothing either, to be honest. I went because of the scholarship to rodeo. And what it done was get me out in a different environment away from home. And I think that was a big asset to my career because I got in the vehicle with some guys that were willing to go and travel and go to bull ridings. I believe if I would have never went to college and stayed at home, I would have been a hometown hero that just stayed at local rodeos and never went big time. That's what I really feel. And that's what my brother done. You know, my brother was very, very good bull rider, but he didn't want to leave the house. He was a workaholic. He loved to work. And so he didn't want to travel. And that's one reason that my brother never made it big time is because of that. And if my mom wouldn't have said, you go to college because you got a full ride and if you don't like it, then you can come home. So that was probably the best thing that ever happened for me. You know, and so I went to college and done very good finals there. And from there, I was so hungry about going pro. And I would enter rodeos. It was really tough back in my era to get in the pro rodeos. And, you know, you're on a permit and you would enter and you would get drawn out because they only allow so many permit guys. I could remember entering rodeo after rodeo after rodeo and not getting in because they only took so many permit guys. And so I was so frustrated. You know, it was probably halfway through the year. And I told my coach, I said, I'm buying my card. I'm sick and tired of getting drawn out and I want to go. He said, please do me a favor. Do not buy your card right now. I said, I'm getting sick. I want to go. He said, look, just take your time. He said, over half the season's gone now. He said, and you can go for rookie of the year. That didn't mean squat to me. I mean, it really didn't mean nothing to me. Rookie of the year, what, you know, who cares? I want to go ride bulls. And thankfully I did listen to him. You know, I kept entering and it seemed like when I finally got in to one of my first pro rodeos, I won second at it. And when I won that money, it's like, I started getting in and started getting in and started getting in. It was so much easier. I don't know the cause of that, but you know, so anyway, I did wait. And then in 1997, I set out, I quit going to college and went on the pro circuit. That was my first year in 1997. And I won rookie of the year that year. I made the national finals and I finished fifth in the world that year. So, you know, it was great. It was an awesome experience for me. And I went back in 98 and rodeoed. And, you know, I think I had a very good year that year. I went into the national finals that year and kind of the spotlight was on me. And they were talking about how I was going to win the world that year and probably was the worst. It was the worst finals I ever had. I got there, and I think I bucked off my first five bulls. And I was like, I wanted to jump out of the top floor of the hotel because it was just – it was so aggravating because, you know, I knew how to ride bulls. Obviously, I was good enough to be there. I would have never made it. And then you got every drunk idiot at the casino trying to tell you how to ride bulls. And it's just like, and they ain't got a clue. And so so anyway, I was really frustrated. And I called my brother and I said, hey, I said, what do I need to do? He said, well, I'm going to tell you what you're going to do. He said, you're going to get on a red eye flight. You're going to fly home and we're going to get on some practice bulls. And then you're going to get a flight back to Las Vegas and finish the finals. I'm like, okay. So that night I was telling the bullfighter, Joe Bumgardner, he was kind of one of the legendaries in that time. And I was telling him what I was going to do. And he said, oh, man, don't do that. He said, Don Kish, he's got bulls here. And Michael Gaughan's got the arena right here. You know, Michael Gaughan owned the Gold Coast at the time. And that's where all, you know, everybody stayed. He said, we can go out there and buck bulls in the morning. I said, well, if you'll set that up, that'll be great. So he set it up. He came out there and helped me. Some other guys came out there, and I got on three bulls. The first one I did buck off of, and the next two I rode. And, man, I went to the Thomas and Mack that night, the next night, and I won second in the round. It was all – everything was right here between these two ears. I mean, it was – you know, I knew how to ride, but I was just fighting my head so bad and frustrated – I couldn't do nothing right. And I just went out there and got on some practice bulls and come back and it was great. And I finished the finals good. I want to say I finished probably sixth in the world that year. And so it took off in 99. And I had a lot of guys at the PBR just say, man, you need to come to the PBR. You need to be committed to this. And I'm like, you know, I tried to explain to them, when I was a kid, the PBR didn't exist. I've dreamed of winning a world title in the PRCA because that's all there was. And that was my goal in life, was to win the world in the PRCA. And so those guys didn't get it, that were begging me to come to the PBR. And I said, I will come when the time is right. Well, I started going to some of the PBRs, but I didn't officially buy my card right then. I was going as a permit guy. And so I was working both. I was going to PRCA rodeos, PBRs. And I can remember at the end of July 1999, I was winning the world in the PRCA. Was like, I had enough money to make the finals. And I told my traveling partner, Myron DeWart, that's who I traveled with for 3 years. And I told him, I said, Myron, I'm going home. I said, I'm sick of this road. He said, but you're winning the world. I said, man, I don't care. I said, I'm burnt out. I said, I don't see how these guys can live on the road like this. I'm done. I said, I'm going home. So I went home, and he kept rodeoing. And the last 3 weeks of the season, I have done fell out of the top 15, like not making the finals no more. And I like panicked. I called him. I said, Myron, I said, man, you got to start entering me. He said, Puddin. He called me Puddin. He said, Puddin, don't worry about it. I've already started entering you. And he just started giving me a list where I was entered at. And he may have entered me in Florida and New York the same night. And I would just have to turn out of where I had the sorriest bull and fly. It costed me a little bit more money at the end because I had to buy last minute plane tickets and turn out of other rodeos because we were double booked. And I finished 13th in the I was 13th coming into the finals that year. I made the finals by $600. And man, I when I went to the finals, I was healthy. I felt good. And you know, I think I won the first two rounds at the finals that year. And I rode eight bulls at the finals and placed in every round and won the world that year. And I also was going to the PBRs that year, and I finished third in the world in the PBR. I had a phenomenal year in 1999. That was probably the you know really the best year I ever had as far as bull riding. And so I did buy my PBR card halfway through the year. So I did win Rookie of the Year in the PBR that year. It's the same year that I won the world in PRCA. And so, man, it was great. And from there, I moved up to DeKalb. Excuse me. I moved up to DeKalb, Texas. I wanted enough money to buy me a 150-acre place there. And so that was all great. And I paid cash for it. And went to some winter rodeos in the PRCA. After that, I was really committed to the PBR then, because you know I fulfilled my dream there. But I went ahead, still rodeoed in 2000. I went to the winter rodeos and didn't do good at all. And so the summer run come, you know, when the summer ran for the PRCA was June, July, August, you know. The PBR kind of, that was their off season. So I entered up in July and I broke my neck at Salt Lake City at the beginning, right there in July. And so that put me out for almost a year. And so from there, after I healed up, I came back to my very first event. It was in Shreveport, Louisiana. It was a PBR event. And I can remember the very first bull I got back on, it was a famous bull called Moody Blues. And I rode him. And when I stepped off, he stepped on my ankle and crushed my ankle. And I had to have surgery on that. So I was out 6 or 7 months on that. And I came back from there and went to two events. And at the third event, I had a bull called Western Wishes. It was in, I won't say Grand Rapids, Michigan. Anyway, he threw me off. And when I landed with my arm behind me and it broke the ball in my shoulder. So then I had to have shoulder surgery. So I had a very bad run of luck, but you know, I was always a guy really. And I truly believe this in from when I was young till now, everything happens for a reason. We may not know today what that reason was, but I truly believe everything happens for a reason. There's a man up above us that knows us better than we think we know our life. So I never got discouraged about it. It was part of bull riding, and God had bigger plans for me. So anyway, after I healed up from that, I rock and rolled and went along and had a very good chance of winning the PBR world in 06. And it was in the short round. Bull jerked a rope out of my arm, out of my hand in about 7 seconds. And I lost $1 million there. But anyway, that was kind of my career. But, you know, I never really... I roped during those times, but I played. My wife was more serious about the roping part of it, and I was just kind of just passing time. You know, I always rode young horses, trained young horses, and so I just wasn't serious about the roping then. After I retired from riding bulls, I got really serious about my roping and training more horses, you know, because that's what I love to do. I can remember training horses ever since I was a young man, like 15 years old. I didn't have a lot of money to go buy nice horses. I had to make them. And so that's the way we done it. I was pretty successful in the team roping and very blessed, to do what I've done. It's a passion of mine, team roping. You know, I rope every day here at my place, and you know, I can be out there all day. And when I say all day, from 7 in the morning to 7 at night, and my wife asked me, she said, how can you do this all day long? I said, I love it. You know, I can't burn myself out because I love it. It's just something I loved. And so anyway, it's, It's been a great career after my bull riding career. It's been phenomenal for us. Me and my wife have together and done together, and I'm gonna tell you, if you ain't ever rode with a family member, it's tough to win with your family members. It's just whether it's your kids or your wife, it's tough. And so we were thankful to win, you know, together big events like that.
Yeah, and so something I really liked is you were talking about being injured, but you never really got discouraged. What are some things that you did to keep, A, stay encouraged, and B, keep preparing yourself for your next bull ride? Because it sounded like you were really kicking off things, and then you were getting hurt, and then you would kind of recover, and you get hurt again. So what were things that you did while recovering through that process?
You know, the only thing I can say I did is when I was able. The worst thing about getting hurt in bull riding for me, it wasn't the injuries. I could deal with pain very well. It was sitting around not doing nothing. That's what killed me. That hurt me more than anything, is having to sit in a chair when I knew I could be outside roping or working on my ranch. That was the worst part of it. But you know, when I healed up to go, you know, I basically, you know, I didn't do I can't say I did a lot to prepare to move on. You know, I did, you know, I did therapy after, you know, when it was time to start therapy. And, you know, I was just hungry to ride bulls. I loved it. It was something that, like I said, I'd wake up in the morning, eat, breathe, and live it. And so I didn't really never get discouraged on it. You know, it was really easy for me to bounce back and come back to it.
Right, right.
So now we all know that rodeo, it's just full of memories. So tell us about some memorable moments that were, you know, in your team roping career or your bull riding career, just all of that.
Man, you know, a lot of memories is, you know, I've got some bull rides that really stick out in my head as far as memories. Man, you know, it's we go to so many towns and when you ride bulls for a living, and you know, there's only so many memories. But you know, some of the best memories is the people that I met along the way, that's been still a part of my life now. Even, you know, for 25 years, meeting them 25 years ago, they're still part of my life today. You know, I was always a person that you know, when you meet somebody, a lot of people, when you meet somebody, that they're like, what can they get out of this? I wanted friendship, memories. You know, I didn't look to see what I could, you know, what's in it for me. It's what I could do for somebody else to make their life maybe a better life, or advice that I could give them to if they're fighting battles, hey, you know, maybe I can help you. Everybody in life is fighting a battle that we know nothing about. You know, it's whether it's drugs, whether it's family, whether, you know, everybody's got some kind of problems going on. And I was always one that just was there to help somebody.
Right. And I know it's like, it's a total game changer. Whether, I mean, it could even be simple things when starting off. I remember when I first started off rodeo, I would be practice roping the dummy, and there was nobody really there to really help or do anything. You didn't really have any friends in the association. And the one person that came by and helped you, whether it was the smallest thing, their name you're going to remember, and you're going to remember that one thing that they helped you with. And it, I mean, it's just something you take home and you practice. Just that one thing that you did for somebody, they're going to remember your name, and they're going to remember, that's a person who's helped me. You know, it's total game changer, and you don't even realize it.
That's right. Well, You know, when you take the time to stop and help somebody, that's huge to other folks. You know, they're like, that guy didn't have to stop and help me, but he took the time out of his busy schedule to stop and spend an hour with me just to help me. You know, that goes a long ways. And so, you know, memories like that is huge. You know, I had a couple bulls, a bull that I rode at Tulsa, a bull called Troubadour. You know, it was the first time that bull's been ridden. And I was 94 and three quarters, 95 and three quarters on that bull. And that was one of the huge rides of my career. I had always wanted to get on that bull, and that was the first chance that I got to get on him, and was really tickled to death. Another bull that big memories that I thought, man, I probably should have been more points on this other bull than I was Troubadour, was Trick or Treat in Salinas, California. You know, that was matter of fact, that was in 1999. And I won the long round there at Salinas and had to spend a $1,100 plane ticket to get back there for the short round. And when I was going there, I knew I had Trick or Treat in the short round. I was like, oh my goodness, because that bull didn't get rode very much. And that bull, you know, that memory was in the back of my head. Chad Castillo had just got wrecked out on him. That bull jerked him down and crushed his entire face. And, you know, you think, I got to spend $1,100 to go get on this bull. So anyway, you know, I flew down there and, you know, I was always a positive guy. My opinion in riding bulls or anything, there's a fine line between cocky and confidence, basically. And I never was a cocky guy. I may have talked trash to my buddies, but cocky wasn't me. But I was always confident. You know, when I flew down there, I knew I was going to ride him, and I told myself I was going to ride him. And you know, I mean, my opinion, if you don't think positive things ain't going to happen. You know, you've got to stay positive. And that doesn't matter whether you're playing baseball, roping, or riding bulls. It's all the same. You know, you can't walk up to the batter's mound and the home plate there and think you're going to, or expect to hit a home run when you're thinking you're going to strike out. It just don't work that way, you know? So I was always positive when it comes to stuff like that.
And what did training look like? Cameron, did you have a question?
Well, I just wanted to rewind a little bit. First, thanks for joining us, Mike. We're glad to have you here. And I want to rewind a little bit to something that you were talking before about just how you just kind of love the sport. And I think it's really often that, especially kids coming up and with social media and technology and stuff, we're always searching for this special secret. Like, what is that special sauce? What is that one thing that's going to make the difference? What is it that's going to make me stand out? And from what I'm hearing you say is that it's not really, there's no secret to it. If you love it and you're willing to work for it and you're passionate about it, you're going to do what it takes to get there. You can search high and low on Google or YouTube or whatever. You can watch all the videos. And not that that's not beneficial, but at the end of the day, you've got to love it enough that you can put all the rest of your injuries or, you know, your mind, you're willing to work on that. Because you love it enough that you're willing to go the length to make it happen.
Well, that's a great point. And, you know, I could sit here and tell you, you know, I was always, whenever I do something, and it doesn't matter, I don't care if it's a race to the barn, I want to win first. It's just, I'm very competitive. And so like my son, he's a little more laid back and easygoing. And, you know, I've always stressed to him, hey, if you want to rope, you've got to get out there and rope the dummy in the morning before we practice. And after we're done, rope the dummy again, you know, and that's what it takes to be great. You can't just go out there and rope four pins and expect to be at the national finals. It don't work that way. You've got to eat it, breathe it, live it. And, you know, so today, you know, I don't know. There may be probably not a lot of people that know a young kid named Nicky Norcott. He's a team roper. I'm telling y'all, you're fixing to hear about him at the national finals when he's old enough. I think he's maybe 16, maybe 17 now. But that kid eats it, breathes it, lives it. I mean, he is all about team roping. I guarantee when he wakes up in the morning, he's got a rope in his hand. He's constantly roping goats. He does whatever it takes to be on top of his game. And that's what it takes to succeed in your sport. You've got to be willing to put in the work and drive and have that desire to drive and work at it every day and all day. But you got to love it too, because if you don't love it, you're not going to work at it like that. But anyway, that's a good point too. I mean, that's what it takes to be on top.
Yeah, and I think you know, you can have as much knowledge as anybody. You can be able to talk the talk, and you can be able, you can research, you know, like I said, you can watch all the videos, you can know all the techniques and all of the things that you're supposed to do. But until you're doing what you're saying, Mike, and you're putting action to it, and you've got that rope in your hand, and you're out there, and you're taking that knowledge and turning it into wisdom by doing it, then you're just a couch critic, you know?
That's right.
Being addicted to it, I know something for me is like team roping this year, especially. It's just been something that I've just like, it's just something I'm addicted to. I rope in the dummy all the time. You know, I know on Sunday, we rope, then we have cowboy church, and then we rope after at someone's house. And the guy said, you've got to be addicted to it if you want to do it. And so I know, like, we literally had to be, mom was like, I'm ready to go, but we wouldn't stop until we got good qualified time. So being addicted to that, I know it's something that's like a total game changer, because it's like you said, you can play around with it, but you've really got to love it, really do. And that's what it's going to take to be able to go big.
That's right. I didn't hear nothing but the last part of it. The I don't know if the internet was cutting out, but I couldn't hear nothing you were saying at the beginning.
I was just saying, it's like, you really just are having to be addicted to it. And that's something that I've really tried to work on, is really being addicted to team roping. It's something that's just like, you've got to love it, and you've got to want to put in the work all the time.
That's right. I mean, that's exactly right. You can't get to the top by not putting in the effort. It don't matter what sport it is. You can't half-ass it. Bottom line, I mean, you've got to be all in or not in, you know, if you want to go to the top, if you want to be one of the best. Mm-hmm. You know, you can halfway do it if you just want to participate, but you got to be all in if you want to be the best. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's down in your heart. I mean, you can't, nobody can give that to you. You got to want it.
Right.
And that's one of the beautiful things about rodeo and the Western industry right now, though, is that you can, if you don't want to be super passionate about it, but you really enjoy it, there's a place for it to be a hobby for everyone. You know, like, you can go to the U.S. Opens, and you can enter the number sevens and the number eights and the number nines. And if that's all that you ever want to do, that's okay. There's a place for you, and it still gets to be a hobby, and that's awesome. And I think our industry has done a great job capturing that. But it's also, if you want to be at the top, you know what it takes.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, it's the team roping world has done phenomenal for the business guy that has to work a job 5 days a week and doesn't get to work at roping every day like some do. So they've got places for everybody. And you know, it's a double-edged sword for me, because I want to be one of the best, which I'll never be Junior Nogueira. I mean, it's obvious. Everybody's got a niche for their own sport. You know, I would have never been, I could have probably put in the time and effort, and I would still probably not be as good as Wesley Thorpe. You know, I think you still have to have a gift for that sport. You know, I could have played baseball, and I did play baseball when I was younger, and I don't think I ever could have been Madison Bumgarner. You know, I think everybody I think that's why there's a spot for everybody in this world. And, you know, you've got to find out what you're good at and what you love and work at it. And so the team roping, it's a double-edged sword because I want to be really good. But the better you get, the less money you get to rope for. The better you are, it's like the pot that you get to rope for is smaller. So if you want to be a number four, number five, that's I wish I could rope in the 8-point roping, because at the 8, 9, 10-point roping is the highest paid ropings there is. And it's crazy. So, you know, we work hard to get good, and then you rope for less money because you're better. So and you know, it's kind of tough. It's kind of tough for like an 8 healer, seven, you know, a seven elite, 8, 9 healers. That's really tough for those guys because they're not good enough to go to the pro rodeos and win against Wesley Tharp and those guys, but they're too good roping the lower number of ropings. So they're kind of limited on, you know, what ropings they get to go rope in.
Right. So I used to ride bulls actually, and I know how tough it is on the body. So what was training looking like when you were still riding bulls?
You know, training for me, you know, I worked at it. I rode horses bareback. You know, for balance, I walked a fence for balance. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't have to work, like, physically, like, work out and stuff for it. I can remember when I was probably in my 5th year of rodeo and riding bulls, Ty Murray asked me, he said, you work out at the gym? And I laughed at him. I said, are you kidding me? I said, I'll never have to work out at the gym. And then he laughed. He said, okay, we'll see. Well, it was about the last 3 years of my career. I could tell I was losing it. And I was about 30 years old. And I could tell that I was losing it. And I was like, gosh, dog, I'm going to have to do something now. I had to eat my words because I basically hired me a professional trainer, and he didn't really have a clue nothing about riding bulls. And so I hired him and had him come to some, I think he flew to 3 bull ridings with me and studied it. And away we went to the gym, and he come up with a bunch of different stuff. And he came up with some stuff that guys are doing today that they take for granted. This guy started that. You know, we had those big medicine balls, and he had me standing on top of that medicine ball, balancing and throwing another ball at me, and I'd have to catch it and squat down, throw the ball back. And he had me doing a lot of stuff on that medicine ball that guys probably wouldn't know today if it wouldn't have been for that guy starting with me. But, you know, I had to start doing that and getting in the gym and working at it that way. And when I was 33 is when I retired. I went about the first quarter of the PBR season, and we were in Kansas City, Missouri. And I bucked off. You know, I've been, for one, I was not really wanting to be there anymore. I was just wanting to be at home. So my drive and my desire wasn't there. I basically was riding bulls for money at that point. Not because I love the sport anymore. I've always loved the sport, but I wasn't craving it, should I say. And so I was just going, trying to win money. And so it was there one night, man, I bucked off a bull that I really felt embarrassed to buck off of. I'm like, there's no reason that a guy should buck off this bull here. I don't know. I'm going to say it, but I don't even think he should have been at the PBR. The bull wasn't that good. And I was just embarrassed. And I walked back in that locker room that night. I sat down in the locker room, and all the guys had done left, and they went out and signed autographs. And Chris Shivers, he come back in the locker room. He said, what are you doing? So, man, I said, you know, I think I'm done. He said, you're done what? I think I'm done riding bulls. I'm saying, I don't think I'm coming back next weekend. He said, man, shut up and come on. He said, you're thinking stupid. I said, man, I'm telling you, I don't think so. I don't want to be here no more. You shouldn't buck off a bull like that either. I said, that's embarrassing. So I called my wife that night. We went back to the hotel room. I called her that night and I said, I'm done. She said, you're done what? I said, I'm done riding bulls. I ain't coming back no more. She said, okay. So I came back home, and in Tuesday I called the PBR and I said, I'm done. I won't be there this weekend. They said, well, you can't quit in the middle of the season. I said, oh, yes, I can. I can quit when I want to quit. They said, no, we got to do a farewell tour. I said, you should have done it already. I said, I'm done. I'm serious. I'm not coming back. And I did. I quit right then. I didn't want to be one of those guys that everybody sat home and talked about, like, oh, God, he sucks. He should have quit a long time ago. You know, he's horrible. He should have hung his hat up a long time ago. I wasn't going to be that guy everybody talked about and made fun of. So I went out and I just quit right then. And I didn't want to embarrass myself, and I didn't want to be there anymore anyway. So it wasn't no point in me kept going, because, you know, if you don't want to be there and you're doing it for the wrong reasons, it's a pretty good chance you're going to get hurt, because you're not there for the right reasons.
Right. And it sure definitely drains you mentally. And that's just rodeo itself. It, you know, it really messes with your mind all the time. So
absolutely.
It sounded like you kind of kept going while your name was still good, if that makes sense. You didn't, like, you were already really, really good, and you already had a really, really good title. It seems like you're like, I'm kind of going down here. Let me just go ahead and stop while my name's still good. Is that accurate?
That's right. You know, I wanted to go out while obviously I wasn't on top, but what?
He froze. Go ahead and keep going, Mike.
He froze up.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, I wasn't on top, but I wasn't on bottom either. And I didn't want to go out when I was on the bottom. I wanted to go out when I was, you know, I still had a name for myself, and nobody wanted to make fun of me for bucking off all the time.
After you'd made that decision and that commitment to be done, was there a period of time afterwards that you doubted yourself, or that it got tough, or like just that transition period? What was that like?
There was never a time that I second guessed myself, you know, because I wasn't wanting to be there no more. No, there was times that I was missing those checks, those $30,000-$40,000 checks every weekend. That hurt, but you know, I mean, I picked up and moved on, and found other opportunities to make money, and I just capitalized on it.
Right.
I think that's a really valuable thing for especially the younger kids to hear, that it's okay to shift. Like, at the end of the line, when you're at the end of the line, there's going to be another opportunity there. There's going to be another way to make money. God's going to have another part to your story. You know, he's got a plan for you that's already pre-designed that he knows about. And when he says it's time to be done, because I have something else for you, it's important to listen so that you don't get hurt, so that you don't, you know, go down the wrong path. And that it's okay to quit while you're ahead, or, you know, quit before it gets bad. And I think that that's a really important lesson, because I think it can be really easy to hang on to things that maybe we shouldn't, because of ego or because of pride or because of society tells us or somebody else tells us that we should keep going. And I think it's just giving yourself permission to be done is just as important.
That's right. Sometimes. You know, I've always been a believer. God don't close the door before he opens another door for you. And if you serve the Lord and believe, you know, that is true. I've had a lot of opportunities in life to do different things, and some have been great, and some I'm glad I didn't take those opportunities. I'm very blessed, you know, where I'm at in life now. And you know, I've 2 years ago, I was blessed with some other very Christian guys in the spray foam business, and took that venture. I didn't know nothing about the spray foam business other than my nephew. You know, I had a nephew that was in that business for 6 years, and a great opportunity came out of it, and I took it and ran, and it's been very, very great for us. You know, it's there's plenty of opportunities out there if you get off your butt and look for them. You those opportunities are not going to come knock on your door and say, hey, won't you come outside? I got something for you. You know, you've got to be out there and you've got to be looking for them and be willing to take it when it comes your way. So, you know, it's I've always said, you know, a guy that gets out there and puts his head down and his butt up will always be successful. But if you're going to sit on the couch, you're not going to be successful. It nothing, you know, other than watching TV. Let me know how that pays you.
Right.
And so I'm sure over your career, you've gotten on many, many bulls. And I kind of want to know, what was the toughest bull you felt was the hardest to cover? And can you tell us that story? Because I know you've gotten on some pretty ranked bulls. I've seen videos.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you two bulls come to mind, and one was Trick or Treat, and it's Salinas, California, and that bull was tough to get by. I had a very, very hard time keeping my feet down in him, but, you know, I never gave up. I kept hustling and made the whistle on him. Another bull that, gosh, dogged, I hate him. I still hate this bull to this day. It was a bull called Rampage. I know a lot of folks today won't remember what bull that is. He was a black kind of Bremer uphorn, and I drew that bull six times in 1 year, and I hated him. He was extremely hard to ride. Not very many guys could get by him because he would just jerk everybody down. And matter of fact, in 1999, I drew that bull at Fort Worth at the PBR in a short round. No, it was, I don't remember if it was a short round or long round, but anyway, he jerked me down and I hit the ground so hard it fractured two vertebrae in my lower back. And anyway, that bull, I drew him, like I said, six times, and I finally rode him in the short round at Tampa, Florida. And after I rode that bull, I never drew him again. I mean, how ironic is that? You know, you draw that bull six times in 1 year, and you finally ride him, and then it's like I never drew him ever again. Matter of fact, I had him one time, and I turned him out and went and got married. I said, I'm out. I'm gone. I'm going to get married. So I flew to Hawaii, and me and my wife got married instead of going to get known. I hated that bull with a passion. He was just so hard to ride. And man, if you didn't do everything perfect, he was going to make you pay for it.
That is crazy to me.
Yeah. So we're closing up on an hour here in a minute, but so this younger generation, we definitely got, you know, good opportunities to watch like guys in your generation and just to look up to you and everything. But so what are some like lessons you've learned from your career, and what are some advice you give to, you know, guys in our generation coming up?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And, you know, I would say, you know, kids today are so worried, and I'm going to be blunt on this. Kids are so worried about getting sponsorships, my opinion, and not every kid, so I don't want nobody to take this wrong, because not every kid's that way, but they are a lot, and it's not just kids, it's humans, period. So I'm not just talking about the younger generation. There's some in my generation. They are so worried about sponsorship and what the sponsorships can do for them. That irritates me, because sponsors can put their patch on anybody with dignity and loyalty. And I mean, there's sponsors can go so many different directions. The way I look at sponsorships, and I've got sponsors today, you know, Fastback Ropes, Big Tex Trailers. I've had those sponsors for over 20 years. They have stuck with me, and it's not because of my name. It's because of the relationships that we've built together, and it's what I can do for them. I don't look at it as a sponsor. What can you do for me? What can you give me? What can you do for me? I go to a sponsorship. Hey, what can I do for you? What can I do to build your brand, your whatever you do, your ropes, your trailers? What can I do to make it better for y'all? That's the way I look at sponsorships. And so many people look at it as what the sponsors can do for them. And that's the you know, the wrong way to look at sponsorships. They can take their sponsorship dollars and go sponsor rodeo. They can do commercial ads. They can go do anything in the world with their money. So, you know, that's so many people need to look at the way that sponsorships is, you know, because those guys don't have to put patches on you. They can go put that money somewhere else. So those people need to look at, hey, what can I do for y'all? What can I do to build y'all's brand?
Right.
And so, you know, that's a way that I look at it. And I build relationships with my sponsors. I don't, you know, this generation today, instead of picking up the phone, and I still pick up the phone, and you can call, ask Terry. Every time I order ropes, I pick up the phone and call her. I don't send her a text, hey, I need 6 ropes of this and 6 ropes of that and 10 ropes of this. I pick up a phone caller. Hey, Terry, how's your day today? Oh, that's great. That's awesome. You know, I build relationships with people. I'm a people person, and I think that's huge. And, hey, I don't know if that's the reason they're still with me today, but whatever it is, it's worked. Whatever I've done has worked because of the relationships that I've built with them, and they've stayed with me for over 20 years. They could have. When I retired from riding bulls, they could have jumped ship and said, hey, you know what? You're not on TV no more. We're gonna do something different. You know, it would have been easy for them to do that, but they didn't. I was always loyal to them, and they were loyal to me. And that goes a long ways today.
I think that what you're saying is so important, and that's something that we really try to stress at Rodeo Kids, too, about the sponsorships. And I think it's, you know, and it's tough because we live in a generation right now where it is easier to get handouts, you know, in some ways. Like the government does create a system that it's easier. I mean, it just is. But the thing that I don't think is talked about often enough is those sponsorship dollars. It's not free money. Somebody worked really hard to get that money. When you get somebody else's money, when you get somebody else's product, that is somebody who put their heart and soul into a company, into a product, somebody who sold a lot of things, who spent a lot of hours. And when they give you something, or it's not really give because it's supposed to be a give-take relationship, you know, a partnership, but that's, you're taking money out of somebody else's pocket. You're taking money that they earned with their hard work, sweat, blood, and tears. And I don't think that that is prevalent enough into what sponsorship dollars are. And just making that really known that it is hard-earned money that you get to take advantage of and you get to roll with. And that's the goal, is for you guys to be able to go on and to not only help you guys get better, because that's definitely what they want to do. They want to see you succeed, and they want to see you grow, and they want to see you become a better people person. That's why they're investing in you, because they believe in you as a person. And so I love that Mike's really talking about building those relationships and going to work for that company, and then that company will go to work for you.
That's right. And you know, another big deal is I've always been like, when a sponsor calls, said, hey, where are you going to be? Are you going to be here at the U.S. finals or wherever? And what do you need? You know, I don't make them ask me, hey, well, can you do this? What do you need? Well, I need somebody to come by there and do this. Hey, jump in. That's part of your duties, is to help endorse their product. And if they call and they need something, jump in. Be willing to do whatever they need done. Because I promise you, I have not had one sponsor ever take advantage of me or just use me. And they're not going to do that. they know that you either have family and other obligations and stuff. They're not going to beg you to come do something. But if they're in a bind and need something, be all in. You know, I mean, my perennial, Dave Nelson, when I was out there at the finals roping, you know, Luke Branquino does his show at the Perina deal trailer. And hey, David, hey, are you going to be out here? Yeah. What do you need? I mean, that's just how I am. What do you need? How can I help you? And, they appreciate that. And, you know, they don't need to beg you to go do something. You need to be offering to do something for them. Whether it pays or it don't pay, it doesn't matter. Build that relationship.
Yeah, and the word travels fast. The kind of person that you are by being endorsed by them as a sponsoree, I guess you could say, like if you're a good person and you're making those relationships and going to work for them, when the next clothing company comes along, you know, they're probably not going to tell, you know, classic ropes because they don't want their competitor. But when the next person comes along and they're out to dinner, they're going to say, man, that Mike White, he's gone to work for us. Like he's been a really good person for us to sponsor. And, you know, that's something to keep in mind, like with Rodeo Kids, with anybody who's sponsoring you, you know, you never know what our network looks like beyond, you know, what you see and who we're going to talk to behind closed doors. And, so I love that. Great advice, Mike. Thank you.
Well, and, you know, loyalty is a big deal. You know, I was with Fastback, like I said, I want to say 23 years now, maybe 24 years. And I had other rope companies make me offers. And, you know, I'm very loyal. And you know, I told them, hey, thanks for the offer, but Fastback's been great to me. I'm not jumping ship because you offered me a better deal. You know, that goes a long ways. To your sponsor is being loyal to them. You know, so many people think, oh man, they're going to get this other company's going to give me $5,000 more. In the end, is it worth it? You know, I mean, to me, it's not, because I can call Terry today and say, hey, I need some help. I need this, this, and this. It's in the mail. Mm-hmm. You know, that loyalty goes a long ways. And I know they appreciate that too, staying loyal to them when other offers come up, you know. And you know, if it's, you know, I can say, hey, if another offer come up and it's life changing, don't just send them a text or say, hey, I had this offer and I'm gone. See you, bye. Just say, hey, look. I had this company make me an offer and I'm just calling y'all to discuss it and let's talk about it and give them an opportunity to maybe do something with you. They may not be able to match it, but they may have incentives or something that could work out with you. You know, don't jump ship just because something seems better on the other side. They say just because the grass is greener, don't mean go in that other field. You know, it's a,
the grass is greener where you water it.
It could be poison in that field too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a big deal. And you know, I could honestly say one thing for kids. And I got into some network marketing, I'm going to say 6 years ago. And this stuff literally changed my life as the way I thought about some things and motivational stuff is get involved in some personal development. That has been huge for me. You know, Eric Thomas is a very good speaker. You know, Les Brown, Denzel Washington. I mean, there are so many. You go to YouTube and put in personal development and Steve Harvey. I mean, there's so many great speakers and motivational speakers and just that part of that personal development, it will change your mindset. And that's what opened my mind as far as making money. You know, money's not everything, but but it also feeds your family. You know, you've got to make money. There's no way around it. But that the way that those guys think will change your entire mindset on some things. It opens your thinking from small thinking to much larger thinking. You know, the way the government and teachers teach today, go get a 8-to-5 job and you're going to make $60,000 or $70,000 a year. That's all you can do. Our society wants us to think that way. Go get a job, go work 8-to-5, and this is what you're going to make. But, you know, when you get involved in that personal development, those guys open that small minded thinking to large thinking. I'm not saying listen to that just about money, but your entire mindset. Those guys, if you listen and get involved in that, they can change your entire mindset. And that goes as far as rodeo, the way you look at rodeo, the way you travel, the way that you do things. And it all also can set, you know, I'm a big believer in, I've had some very wealthy guys preach to me about investing, different investments as a young guy. And I was like, man, I was making stupid money and I was like, man, it'll never end. This bull riding's going to keep me wealthy forever. It all comes to an end at some point. I don't care what you do. It all comes to an end. And I was too hard headed when I was making, there were some years that I made $400,000 or $500,000 riding bulls. And if I would have listened to those guys and went and invested, put some mini storage units in or some apartments and done stuff like that, today I wouldn't have to be worried about working my butt off to make money. I've tried to even talk to some young guys that made a lot of money. Hey, look, if you can stand $100,000, go invest that in either land or apartments or complexes and work, do that. I'm telling you, open your mind and that personal development will open your mind to all of that and set you up for success down the road.
That is right. So true. And I've learned so much from this podcast. I've taken so many notes. And me and Zach still have so many more questions to ask. And I know that we have a lot more to learn. So I was wondering, is there a way that we could do a part two of this podcast?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I will get back with you and I'll talk to Zach. And we would love to schedule a part two because there's so much more and so many more things we want to discuss. And we've learned so much and I've really enjoyed this. And yeah, I'll definitely be reaching out to setting up a part two.
Awesome, Isaac.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you so much for joining. We really appreciate it.
You bet, Zach. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for joining. And yeah, we will reach back out here shortly.
You bet. Y'all have a great night.
You too.
Yes, sir. You.